Chibandu, for your kindly words. The title of my talk is The Challenge of Kindly Speech, and we'll come back to the challenge later on in the talk. So the first thing about speech is that speech is important. Speech is important. According to Buddhism, human beings, or the human personality, consists of three elements. And those three elements are body, speech, and mind. And the path of transformation, which Buddhism is, or which Buddhism aims at, is the path of transforming body, speech, and mind. In the dedication ceremony, I'm sure many of you have heard the dedication ceremony, it contains the words, "May our communication with one another be Sangha." So our communication with one another is generally through speech. So speech is the thread, if you like, the thread from which the tapestry of the Sangha is woven. If you're going to weave a beautiful tapestry, a tapestry of the Sangha, if you're going to weave a beautiful tapestry, your thread has to be clean, strong, and beautiful. If we are going to create Sangha, our speech has to be clean, strong, and beautiful. And I'm going to be looking at the ways to improve our speech in the course of this talk. So speech is important because it's essential to the creation of the Sangha. It's also important simply because it's so prevalent. For most of us, our lives are full of words. The written word, by the way, should also be included under speech for the purposes of this talk, and for the purposes of speech generally in Buddhism. It includes the written word. So words are everywhere. Daily we're bombarded by the written and the spoken word. We ourselves are constantly churning out words. And all these words are manifestations of thoughts. They're manifestations of mental states, of states of consciousness. So these mental states, states of consciousness, are being communicated through the constant stream of words. This downpour, this avalanche of words is constantly communicating mental states, states of consciousness. And this has an effect. What we say affects us and affects others. What we hear and read affects us and others. Speech is a manifestation of consciousness, and speech is constantly modifying consciousness. This is because speech is an action, and actions have consequences. As you know, according to the law of karma, skillful actions have beneficial consequences and unskillful actions have bad consequences. So speech is an action and unskillful speech has bad consequences, skillful speech has beneficial consequences. I'm sure this is pretty obvious to you all, but actually stating the obvious can be a skillful use of speech too. So speech is important because it is essential to the communication which is Sangha, that communication which is Sangha. Speech is important because it's so prevalent, and speech is important because it has consequences. Consequences for us and for others. Speech is important. And because speech is so important, it's given quite a lot of attention in Buddhism. Perfect speech is one of the limbs of the Eightfold Path. Kindly speech is one of the four Sangharvastus. And no less than four of the precepts, the 10 precepts observed by order members, are concerned with speech. So before talking about the kindly speech as a Sangharvastu, which is what I'm supposed to be talking about, I want to talk about these four precepts, the four training principles which are concerned with speech. it'll become clear why. After I've talked about those, I'll go on to talk about kindly speech as Sangharavastu, or kindly speech as a means of unification of the Sangha. And I'm going to make a connection between the training principles, the precepts, and kindly speech as a Sangharavastu. I'm also going to talk a bit more about the effects of speech, and I'm going to finish off by exhorting you to practice speech as a means of unification, that is, as a means of creating the spiritual community. So first of all, the four precepts, the four training principles relating to speech. Again, I'm going to be stating the obvious here, but I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm just going to do it. So as you know, the four precepts can be stated negatively in terms of what we should refrain from, or positively in terms of what we should do. So the positive formulation of the speech precepts consists of three rather than four principles, just because the third and fourth are put together, conflated together. So I'm just going to mention the negative formulation, but I'm going to concentrate on the positive formulation of the four speech precepts. The positive formulation can also be seen as four levels of increasingly skillful speech. So the precepts are, I undertake the training principle to refrain from false speech. I undertake the training principle to refrain from harsh speech. I undertake the training principle to refrain from frivolous speech. And I undertake the training principle to refrain from slanderous speech. And the positive formulation is, with truthful communication, I purify my speech. With words kindly and gracious, I purify my speech. And with utterance helpful and harmonious, I purify my speech. So those are the four levels of speech: truthful speech, kindly speech, helpful speech, and harmonious speech. So that's an ascending order. Truthful speech is the basis of all skillful speech. It's the starting point. Truthful speech is factual. It's congruent. It doesn't omit what should be included, and it doesn't exaggerate for the sake of distortion. It doesn't exaggerate to distort. So truthful speech is, first of all, factual. So this is very fundamental. It's also quite difficult. To be factual when relating something that happened or something that was said is not at all easy. It's not easy because it demands a lot of awareness. And it's not easy because we tend to experience the world through a cloud of subjective emotion. So if we want to be factual, we need to bear in mind that what we hear is coloured by our prejudices. And we need to bear in mind that we tend to forget things quite easily. Sometimes the best we can say is that we don't remember, or we are unsure. We think it was like this or that, but we are not certain. Truthful speech tries to be more than just factual in a legalistic sense, though. It also tries to convey the spirit of what was said, the spirit of the original. So truthful speech does not leave out what should be included, and truthful speech does not exaggerate just for effect. So truthful speech is as factual as possible, bearing in mind our limitations, and truthful speech tries to convey the spirit of what happened or what was said. So it's very important to get this established. All the other levels of skillful speech rest on truthful speech. They depend on truthful speech. false speech cannot be kindly or helpful or harmonizing. False speech can only be flattering, misleading, and undermining of trust. Some kind of trust is essential for the functioning of human society. And within the spiritual community, trust is everything. Trust has been defined as knowing that the other person is going to respond to you in accordance with the love mode and not in accordance with the power mode. So this means that within the Sangha, we trust that our fellow members of the spiritual community have our best interests at heart. If we don't have this trust, we really have to do something about it. Because without trust, there is no spiritual community. If we have truthful communication established, well established in our Sangha, then trust is much easier to build, much easier to develop and establish trust. So truthful communication is fundamental. It's of fundamental importance to the spiritual community and to the further development of skillful speech. So the second level of speech, and the second precept relating to speech, is kindly speech, or words kindly and gracious, as it says in the precept. Now this is not the same as kindly speech as a Sangharavastu. I'll say more about that later though. So at this level of speech, kindly speech, we're concerned with two things. We're concerned with the emotions behind our speech, and we're concerned with the manner of our speech. Kindly speech is speech based in metta, speech infused with metta, and gracious speech is speech which is spoken in a courteous or friendly manner. Kindly speech expresses hospitality and generosity. Kindly speech rejoices in the good qualities and appreciates the beneficial activity of others. So kindly speech is the verbal expression of metta. It's the verbal expression of the metta that fills your heart. I'm just going to read a bit from this book called The Duties of Brotherhood in Islam, which is about kindly speech. So one of the duties of brotherhood in Islam is this. It says, just as brotherhood calls for silence about unpleasant things, so it requires the utterance of favorable things. Indeed, this is more particularly a feature of brotherhood, because anyone satisfied with silence alone might as well seek the fellowship of the people of the tombs. You should use the tongue to express affection and to inquire agreeably about your brother's circumstances. If one of you loves his brother, let him know it, because the communication brings about an increase in love. If the brother knows that you love him, he will naturally love you, without a doubt. If you know that he loves you too, then without a doubt, your love will increase. Thus, love will grow progressively from either side and will multiply. So that's something of the flavor of kindly speech. Now, the words you use to express kindliness have to bear a close relationship to what you're saying. This is why kindly speech is gracious. If you're swearing and shouting, it's unlikely you'll be expressing kindliness, even if it's your intention. So if we have a habit of swearing, for instance, or of being a bit cynical in our speech, we need to try to change that so that there is a greater congruency between the content of our speech and the form of our speech. what we're saying and how we're saying it. So our words and how we say them need to convey the feeling of metta, the atmosphere, the flavor, the perfume of metta, not just the shell or the husk. The next level of skillful speech is helpful or meaningful speech. So we're setting our heights higher again here. Not only is our speech truthful, not only is it kindly, but it's also meaningful or helpful. So for a Buddhist, meaningful speech is speech which helps us to go for refuge. Or in other words, speech which helps us to change, which helps us to transform ourselves, to grow, to develop. Meaningful speech or helpful speech is speech which helps us to take responsibility for our lives and for our mental states. So for a Buddhist, meaningful speech encourages responsibility. It encourages us to live our own lives. So the phrase, "Believe in me and I will save you," is not helpful or meaningful speech in Buddhism. "Believe in yourself and act skillfully" is the Buddhist creed. So meaningful speech encourages us to take responsibility for ourselves. It encourages us to change, to grow. It encourages us to transform ourselves into more generous, expansive, positive, compassionate, wise people. This means that meaningful or helpful speech expresses right views, and it counteracts wrong views. So right views are views which are in accordance with reality. They're in accordance with the law of karma and in accordance with the reality that all beings are interconnected and interdependent. Right views are in accordance with the reality that all humans can attain enlightenment, can attain to the perfection of wisdom and compassion. Wrong views do not accept that actions have consequences. Wrong views tend to divide humanity because they don't recognize the interdependence of consciousness. And wrong views don't expect that people can and do grow and develop spiritually. Wrong views don't accept the possibility of enlightenment, of that constant creativity and unceasing altruism. So there are many wrong views in the world, and we have all been affected by them to some degree, so that we need to examine our views. We need to compare and contrast our views with the Dharma, compare and contrast our views and discuss our views with our friends, so we can begin to clarify what is wholesome and what is not wholesome in our views and beliefs. In doing this, we will be transforming our speech and it will become more meaningful and more helpful. Our speech expresses our views, and if our views are wrong views, or to the extent that our views are wrong views, our speech will be unhelpful. So right views and wrong views are not just intellectual convictions, which we can easily change. Our views are often based in our deepest needs and fears, and they're part of an identity we have formed, so that changing our views can often be a painful and even traumatic affair. We resist every step of the way. To develop helpful, meaningful speech, we need to try to become steeped in right views. We need to immerse ourselves in the perspective of the Dharma and begin to transform ourselves at that level of our deepest needs. We want our ideals to displace our fears as motivating forces in our lives. We want to become motivated by our aspirations rather than our anxieties. So the highest level of skillful speech is harmonious speech, or harmonizing speech. This is speech which creates harmony, especially speech which creates harmony where previously there was strife or disharmony. The practice of harmonizing speech involves passing on whatever good or positive things we have heard about others and refraining from disseminating whatever might lead to dissent or quarrels. So harmonizing speech enriches the lives of those around us, tends to create a cooperative, harmonious atmosphere. And that cooperative, harmonious atmosphere is essential to the life of the Sangha. It's essential to the health of the spiritual community. So the four levels of speech that are set out in the four precepts are to be practiced in order to purify our speech. They are how we train ourselves to be ever more skillful in our communication, ever more skillful in our conversation, our writing, and every way we use words. They're training principles. This is how we would naturally and spontaneously speak if we were enlightened. Because we're not enlightened, we have to make an effort to practice these precepts. We have to be mindful and vigilant as we speak, so we don't lapse too often into old habits of exaggeration or harshness or slander. So the subject I've been asked to talk about this evening is on an even higher level than those four training principles. It is kindly speech as one of the four Sangharavastus, kindly speech as one of the four means of unification of the Sangha. So this corresponds more or less to the fourth level of speech, namely harmonizing speech. However, it's slightly different in that the motivation or the intention behind it is slightly different. So the intention behind harmonizing speech as a precept is to purify one's speech, to be more ethical, to train oneself to be more sensitive and appropriate in one's speech. The motivation for kindly speech as a Sangharavastu, or means of unification, is to create Sangha, to create the spiritual community. So harmonizing speech as a precept is practiced for one's own sake, and harmonizing speech as a means of communication is practiced for the sake of the whole spiritual community. It's a wider, more expansive ideal. It is the speech aspect of the Bodhisattva ideal. Now, the Bodhisattva ideal, as you know, no doubt, is the ideal of practicing the spiritual life and attaining enlightenment, not just for your own sake, but for the sake of others too. In fact, for the sake of all living beings. So kindly speech, or harmonizing speech, as a Sangharavastu, is an expression of the Bodhisattva ideal. It's an expression of the altruistic, other-regarding aspect of the spiritual life. Speech at this level is concerned with building the spiritual community, with creating the conditions and the atmosphere in which the Sangha can flourish and grow. So if we create the conditions for the spiritual community to grow and thrive, we help ourselves as well as others, because we are part of the spiritual community. We need the spiritual community. So as always in Buddhism, what helps others helps ourselves. Bhante says, we cannot help others without helping ourselves. We cannot help ourselves without helping others. So harmonizing speech is the highest level of speech. But it's essential to realize that each level of speech includes the preceding levels. In other words, harmonizing speech is not separate and distinct from truthful speech, affectionate speech, meaningful speech. It includes them. If we want to practice harmonizing speech, we need to ensure that our speech is truthful, if affectionate, and helpful. So I'm going to go on to say something about the effects of speech, but just before that, I'm just going to summarize what I've said so far. So I started by emphasizing the importance of speech in general. Speech is important for three reasons, namely, it's essential to the creation of the Sangha, it's important because it's so prevalent, and it's important because it has consequences. So then I mentioned the four speech precepts, and I spoke about them as the four levels of speech. I mentioned factual speech, as meaning not omitting what should be included and not exaggerating. I mentioned affectionate and gracious speech, being the verbal expression of feelings of metta. I mentioned the need to reflect on and examine our views so that our speech would be more in accordance with reality and therefore more helpful and meaningful. And I mentioned harmonizing speech, which tends to create a cooperative and harmonious atmosphere. And I said that harmonizing speech as a precept corresponds to kindly speech as a sangharavastu, or means of unification. The use of speech to create harmony and to enhance and invigorate the Sangha is an aspect of the practice of the Bodhisattva ideal, the altruistic or other regarding dimension of the spiritual life. And finally, I said that harmonizing speech includes all the other levels of speech. It includes truthful, affectionate, and meaningful speech. So I'm just going to say a few words now about the effects of speech. Sometimes I think we don't really realize the effects of speech. Perhaps it's because we have a poor self-image or low self-esteem. We don't recognize the effect our words can have on others. But our words do have an effect. Maybe it's easier to get a feeling for the effect that our words have by considering the effect that other people's words have on us. How we have been affected by the words of others. I'm just going to give you two examples from my own life of how I've been affected, strongly affected by the words of others. Two positive examples I've chosen. I come from a very poor background in rural Ireland. And when I was 18, I came to London and I got a job with a firm of accountants and started studying accountancy. And a few years later, I was well on my way to a lucrative career as an accountant. Now, I don't know if you can imagine what this might mean coming from a small, poor rural community in Ireland, but I can tell you, my mother was proud of me. My whole family was. But I was not satisfied. In fact, I was very unhappy. I was tormented by more existential questions about the meaning of life. I was only 18, after all. I found my career suffocating and meaningless. And I wanted to give it up. But I was very worried. I was very worried about upsetting my mother. However, I didn't really realize my mother's strength. And when I eventually told her that I wanted to chuck in my career and had no plans for my future, I was surprised and delighted by her response. She was a poor uneducated, unsophisticated countrywoman. But her response, though it was simple, had a very profound effect on me. She said, "It's your life. You live it as you see fit." I felt liberated by those words. And ever since, those few words have had a tremendous effect in my life. Those few words, "It's your life. You must live it as you see fit." It's been a sort of touchstone of inspiration and integrity in my life ever since. So a few simple words can have a profound effect, especially when they come from the heart. Another positive example in my own life occurred in 1983. I was living in West Berlin at the time, and I met a Sri Lankan monk, Maha Dhammanissanti, I just remembered his name. He told me about the five precepts, and he taught me the Metta Bhavana. And as a result, I decided that I was a Buddhist. So those few words changed my life completely. They set me on the path which has brought me here tonight to talk to you about kindly speech. So I'm sure if you reflect on it for a moment, you'll find examples in your own life of the strong effect that a few words can have. Either examples of your own words affecting others, or yourself being affected by the speech or writing of others. I was reminded today of the effect of words. I was down at Aryatara with Satchabandhu. I'd never been there before. And I'd always had this idea about Aryatara, that it was quite a small place with tiny rooms and people cramped into it, crushed into it. This is a sort of image that has been in the FWBO for a number of years. I went down and I was very pleasantly surprised to find it is a beautiful house, a lovely garden, people have plenty of space there, and it's completely different from my imagination. But some words somewhere had created a reputation for Aryatara, and reputations get destroyed by words. Words can have a profound effect. Wordsworth, the poet Wordsworth, he knew something about words. He said, "Words are too awful an instrument for good and evil to be trifled with. They hold above all other external powers a dominion over thoughts." So yes, words are too awful an instrument for good and evil to be trifled with. Words can be used quite consciously as an instrument for good. And that, in essence, is what kindly speech as a means of unification is about. It's about consciously using words as an instrument for good. So how do we use our speech as an instrument for good? Well, when Satchabandhu asked me to give this talk, he asked me to come up with four practical suggestions for how to put kindly speech into practice more fully. So that's what I'll do. In fact, I've come up with a challenge for you. I'm going to challenge you to practice kindly speech more. When I was a child, I remember we used to say to each other, "I dare you. I dare you to do this or that." And of course, it was like an injection of excitement or danger into the situation. I was asking Satchabandhu today if he did that when he was a kid, and they did that in Mauritius too. So it's of course, we're all grown up and sophisticated now. Nevertheless, I'm going to say, "I dare you." So here's my challenge. Here's what you have to do to practice kindly speech. First of all, clean up your speech. If you're in a habit of swearing or being harsh in your speech, then you need to give it up. Swearing, cynicism, harshness in speech can be a habit, like smoking. When we're adolescents, we smoke to show how grown up we are. We swear for the same reason. However, the real proof of adulthood is giving up the habits of adolescence. So if we have any adolescent habits of speech, we need to give them up as a basis for embarking on a more thorough practice of kindly speech. So that's my first suggestion, or my first challenge. Delete expletives and cynicism and harsh speech. Now, my next two suggestions involve you talking about people behind their backs. I want you to talk about others behind their backs. So usually when we're talking about people behind our backs, this is understood to mean backbiting or slander. I want you to speak well of people behind their backs, to praise and rejoice people in people behind their backs. Now, this can be a very powerful, effective practice. It helps to create sangha in a way that even direct, face-to-face rejoicing doesn't. It creates an atmosphere of friendliness and goodwill, an atmosphere of metta in which harmony flourishes. So there are two specific ways in which I'd like you to talk about others behind their backs. Firstly, appreciating what people do. I'm sure people here do a lot. I've been here most of the day, and people are rushing around doing things all the time. There's a lot happening here in Croydon, in the Mandala. People had to do things for this to happen tonight. So appreciate what people do. And secondly, rejoice in their qualities. So it's often easy to take people for granted, and especially to take for granted what they do. But we shouldn't take what people do for granted. We should try to be aware of the efforts people are making, of the energy they're giving, the effort and the effect that they're having. And we can give voice to that awareness by simply appreciating what they do. We can appreciate them face to face, tell them that we appreciate what they're doing. And in our practice of kindly speech, as a means of unification, we can appreciate them behind their backs as well. So that's appreciating what people do. Rejoicing in someone's qualities requires even more awareness. What someone is doing can be quite obvious, but their qualities can be much more difficult to see. We need to observe people and think about them in order to really see their qualities. It's possible to see very general qualities in almost anyone who's trying to practice the spiritual life. But to be aware of their uniqueness, their special qualities, and to give voice to that is much more difficult. That requires reflection. To notice and to give voice to someone's special qualities is like calling them by their real name. That's what happens when someone gets ordained. So by rejoicing in someone's uniqueness, in their special qualities, we can give the gift of awareness to others, and we can contribute to creating a harmonious atmosphere in which the Sangha can flourish. So those are my second and third challenges. I hope you can see that they are challenging. To practice them, you have to change. And my fourth challenge is perhaps the most difficult of all, because it demands positive emotion and confidence. Encourage each other. That's it. Just encourage each other. So that seems simple enough. But I think giving encouragement can be very difficult indeed. To give encouragement needs courage. giving encouragement is, in fact, giving courage. Now, so often we suffer from fear, from lack of confidence, from low self-esteem. To be able to encourage others, we need to be able to raise our heads out of the mire of self-pity or low self-esteem. And we need to be able to take positive action in spite of our fears. So if we take responsibility for ourselves, if we do something about our lack of metta, we will be giving courage by example. And if we can expand beyond our self-concern and empathize with others, words of encouragement will come naturally to us. So words of encouragement are not sentimental. It's not there kind of words, the sort of words that you speak to a baby. Words of encouragement should be invigorating, energizing, uplifting. When we need courage to face our fears or to overcome our limitations, we need energy. To encourage others is to give them energy, the energy to change and grow. So these are my four challenges then. Or these four are the challenge of kindly speech. Firstly, clean up your speech, or delete expletives, as I said. Secondly, appreciate what people do. Thirdly, rejoice in the qualities of others, their special, their unique qualities. And fourthly, encourage each other. So this afternoon I wrote these down on a piece of paper. I'm going to ask my beautiful assistant to pin them up. So firstly, as I said, I've put it down as delete expletives. You'll see why in a few minutes. One thing, while Satchibananda is doing that, I want to emphasize one point. A central point is that what you say to people is important, but what you say about people is even more important when it comes to building a spiritual community. So we got appreciate what people do. And I was saying in the talk that it's good if you do this behind people's backs, because what you say about people is really important. I hope none of you, or not too many of you, have been to art school. If you have, maybe you ought to close your eyes or something to avoid unnecessary pain. So there you are. DARE. That's my dare. That's my challenge. Now, I've issued a challenge, and I've issued a challenge for a specific reason. I've put forward this practice of kindly speech as a challenge for a specific reason. And the reason is that a challenge calls forth heroism. It calls forth the qualities of heroism. And heroism is courage in action. Heroism in the spiritual life is energy in pursuit of the good. So to practice kindly speech needs courage and energy. You need the courage and the energy to go beyond your habits. You need the courage and energy to enter into a new way of communicating, a new way of interacting. A way of interacting that's inspired by a burning desire for harmony, a passion for unity. So when we have the courage, when we have the energy to break out of our habitual ways of speaking, when we're able to appreciate and to rejoice in and to encourage others in a kindly and gracious manner, then we will be able to practice kindly speech as a means of unification of the spiritual community. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.